plan for the summer. I'm not sure how long we'll go, but as we did last year, the plan for the summer is to follow the somewhat common minhag and transition to learning Pirkei Avos. There was, I think, maybe an original minhag, which is very popular, goes back many, 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 many years, was to learn Pirkei Avos in between Pesach and Shavuos. But there's also a somewhat common minhag to extend that through the summer months. So even though throughout the year we had different mini-series on various halachic and hashkafic topics, but I think last year after Pesach, we ended up doing, I think, 5 or 6 weeks worth of shurim on Pirkei Avos before we took a summer break. So I think that'll be the plan for this summer as well. And like we did last time, usually I think the plan was each week we picked the Mishnah from a different perek as we went through the entire Pirkei Avos, highlighting one Mishnah and all the various nuggets of wisdom that are included in that perek. So now that we are in the first week, right after Shavuos, so I thought it made sense to start already at the beginning, to go back, of course, to the first chapter of Pirkei Avos. And the truth is that last year I think we picked the second Mishnah or one of the other Mishnayos to study, because there's so many beautiful ones. But today I thought it made actually more sense we should really start at the beginning, which is not only the first Mishnah in all of Pirkei Avos, but also as an introduction to Pirkei Avos. Why is it so important? And what are some of the themes and issues that are kind of animate all of Pirkei Avos? So this is more of a meta introductory type shir, but it is grounded in the initial and opening Mishnah of Pirkei Avos. So let's review this first and very famous and well-known Mishnah. This is the first source on top of your sheet, where the Mishnah tells us, Moshe kibel Torah mi Sinai, u'masara li Yehoshua. Moshe got the Torah mi Sinai. Now how would you translate mi Sinai? Well, from Sinai, but that's right. Hard to. That's not really right. Literally, that makes no sense, right? A mountain can't give you anything. So it presumably means he got it from Hashem, but at or on Sinai. Now, if that's the correct translation, which I think it is, so it begs the obvious question, which is, so then why not just say that, right? So why would it write it in this way? So that's something we'll have to try to answer. But once Moshe got the Torah, then Masara li Yehoshua. Okay, what does Masara mean? Gave over. Good. So I can think of at least two questions so far on just those two words. U'masara li Yehoshua. What do you think? What bothers you about that? Let's read with a critical eye. As I point out to you all the time, and I certainly point out to the men sometimes in those shurim, which is that the more familiar we are with a story in the Chumash, in the Tanakh, the more familiar we are with the text, the more we take it for granted, and therefore usually the less critically we think about it. So we all know this Mishnah, but think about it for a second. There's a few things that really makes no sense about saying Moshe got the Torah, u'masara li Yehoshua. One is literary and one is more substantive. What?
It sounds like he handed it to him right away.
Okay, so I'm not sure I would read it the way you did, but I think what you're picking up on is the choice of the word u'masara. What would we have expected perhaps it to say? Some version of he taught. Right, not that he gave. Why use that word? I'm not saying it's the worst word in the world. Worst word in the world. That's a tongue twister. But it's a little bit of a surprising choice. Why use the word umasara? Why not he taught? Anyway, that's one question. What's another question? Not about the language, just more substantively. Why say Moshe gave the Torah to Yehoshua if he gave it to all of us? He didn't only give it to Moshe. It wasn't like they had this little, you know, pinky swear club. You know, up in the treehouse in the backyard, and only the two of them knew about it. It wasn't exclusive. There was no club. Moshe gave the Torah to everybody. So what's going on here? Okay, that's another question. Then we say after Yehoshua, he gave it to the Zakenim, right? We have a tradition that there were about 70 Zakenim, who were the elders, contemporaries of Yehoshua. But some of the Farshim say we're not talking about the contemporaries of Yehoshua, because there he wasn't teaching them. They also were students of Moshe. But it's referring to the elders that were actually students of Yehoshua. Okay, an anonymous group of great people. And then we have another generation, subsequent to that generation, Uzakenim, the Nevi'im. Then we have, of course, the huge epoch that we know from the Tanakh of the Nevi'im. They were the next link in the chain. Eventually, Nevi'im, Masrua. Here we have again that word Masrua. So we have to know why that word reappears, because it just took a hiatus for two sections. But then it reappears, Nevi'im, Masrua, La'anshe, Knesset HaGedola. Who were the Anshe Knesset HaGedola? They were a group of great rabbis, which included actually still some prophets, but they were actually a group of great rabbis that were operative in the first part, in the beginning of the Bayis Sheni, of the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. So, roughly speaking, we've just covered about 950 plus years. From Moshe to, if Yeshua through all that period, Haim, Amru, and then finally, the Mishnah transitions to actually something of substance, the type of thing that we're familiar with from the rest of Perkei Avos, these various aphorisms, ethical advice, religious advice, Haim, Amru, Hanjek Nesas HaGdola, three things, Shlosh Advarim. Number one, Heve Mutnim Bedin, you should be deliberate in judgment. Number two, Emidu Tamidim Harbe, you should establish or have or raise many, many students. And number three, V'asu Siyag the Torah, you should make a protective fence around the Torah. Now, if time permits, we may spend a little bit of time on just some simple, straightforward reflections and insights of these three things. But as I mentioned at the outset, what I really want to focus on is more of an introduction to all of Perkei Avos. And especially, I want to tackle the first part of the Mishnah, which is the part that's so atypical, which is this whole idea of the link in the Masorah. This idea of Moshe all the way to Anshek Nesla Gedola. What is it? We already asked a few little questions about language, but really the bigger question, of course, is what is this doing here? Right? The idea that we have a Masorah that's not unique to Perkei Avos. We could have started every Masechet like this. And why Dafka Perkei Avos do we start this way? What's going on? So that I think is a real good doorway or pathway into explaining just in general what the whole purpose of Perkei Avos is. So that's what I really want to focus this year on. If we have time, I want to come back to at the end. If we have the time, thank you. If we have time, I want to come back to the three things that are mentioned in this Mishnah. And if not, then it'll just be Od Chazon Lemoed. So, with that being said, we've just reviewed the basic text of this first Mishnah. Let's take a step back. And first thing I want to share with you is how Chazal themselves, how the Mishnah, how the Gemara, how Chazal themselves viewed Pirkei Avos as something very, very special and something elevated. Right? It's not just that in our generation or in our parents' generation, or in recent years, Pirkei Avos is this hallowed text. And if you go to any Jewish bookstore, you look for where are your Pirkei Avos books, right? Maybe other than the Haggadah, right? You're not going to find anything else that has that many, right? There's tons of commentaries on Perkei Avos. There's no rabbi ever, including this one, who doesn't dream, oh, maybe one day I'll write my commentary on Perkei Avos, right? There's so much there. It's so rich. There's so much, right? But that's not new. Chazal themselves were aware that there could be something very unique and special about Perkei Avos. And one interesting text which makes that point, which I think is worth considering, is source number two. Very straightforward Gemara, but again, it looks straightforward, but it could be deceptive in the sense that there's actually much more than meets the eye. So the Gemara is in source number two, and that is in Baba Kama and Daf Lamed. And here we have three different opinions. And at first glance, I would say they're probably arguing, but perhaps we'll see that that's not necessarily the case. But three different opinions, according to the Gemara, Haiman deboi lemehevi chasida. Person who wants to be a chassid. Now, hopefully it goes without saying that when Chazal used the term chassid, it was not the trademark chassid who has to wear a black coat or have curly payas. That's a very, very modern invention. The term chassid, though, is not modern at all. The term chassid goes all the way back. And in this Gemara and in many others, we see that chassid is considered perhaps the highest appellation that anyone can have. You could be a hardcore rationalist, clean-shaven and in modern clothing, but be a chassid, at least in theory, from the Chazal perspective. It's not the way we use the term now. Right? Chassid was the highest level of piety, pretty much a half step below having Ruach HaKodesh or Nevuah or things like that. Okay? So how does a person, what should a person do, says the Gemara, if they want to be a chassid? Now, I would have said the simplest thing, well, do all the mitzvos. So I don't think that this Gemara is denying that. I think this Gemara is saying is that that might not be sufficient. Right, we're not just looking for you can't spend all day on Facebook or Twitter, but do whatever this Gemara says and count to be a chassid. It assumes the basics of a religious observant life, but then the Gemara wants to know: but is there some area that you could specialize in? What would be the thing that I could focus on, that I could really emphasize and specialize in, that might really make me into somebody special? So actually, the Gemara gives three opinions. The first opinion is anonymous by Rabbi Yehuda himself. He answers. L'kayim mili dinazikim. which is understood as he should study, and then hopefully, of course, not only study, but then live up to the standards of what Chazal referred to as Meseches Nezikin. Now, we don't have a Meseches Nezikin anymore, because it was actually broken down into three different tractates of Baba Kama, Baba Basra, and Baba Metzi, Baba Basra. But the broader point is, Nezikin seeming to be an allusion to monetary law. Right? Nezikin is one example of monetary law, which is, if you do something to your neighbor, right, and you back into their car, or you don't realize and something falls from your yard and it destroys all their flowers or something like that, or any business deal, you made a deal with somebody to buy their car, and then you found out that you got a better deal or something, but am I really bound by that? Did I sign a contract? Did I shake their hand? What's all of that stuff? I think for our purposes we could say is being referred to, says Rabbi Yehuda, if you want to become a real chassid, you got to be an expert in, again, you could say monetary law, you could say damages, or you could say more broadly, how to deal appropriately with other people. That's the first opinion. The second opinion, Rava Amar, Mili de Avos. Says Rava, you want to be a chassid? Study, internalize, exemplify what is taught in Pirkei Avos. And third and lastly, the final opinion, Amri Law, some anonymous third view, Mili de Brachos. Become an expert in making brachos. Right? Three different opinions. How does one achieve spiritual excellence? Again, aside from the most basics, but how do I become truly an excellent, pious, holy Jew? One opinion, focus on monetary, or I would say broadly, interpersonal halachos. Number two, Pirkei Avos. And number three, brachos. So, very straightforward Gemara, very easy to read. Question, of course, is what's, you can, certain Gemaras, even if they're short on the words or easy, or with easy words, you could just tell there's something really profound going on here. Now, you don't always have, Chazal themselves reflecting on what would make somebody truly great. So much of the halacha is the nitty-gritty stuff. So we believe that if you amass all that nitty-gritty details, you then take a step back and you've accomplished something. But here you have Chazal themselves kind of, asking the big questions. What's important in life? How do I do something great? So this, of course, deserves some serious reflection. So I want to share with you three different approaches, really two, shtayim, or shalosh shehem shtayim, if you will. Really two approaches, but let's see it in three different sources. First, let's just see some of the highlights in source number three. Source number three is a commentary. Some of you may remember this from last year. We use it a lot when we study Pirkei Avos. And that is a sefer called the Magen Avos. The Magen Avos was a late Rishon, the Tashbetz, and his commentary on Pirkei Avos. And he quotes this Gemara, and he explains as follows. Take a look at the second line of source number three, where it's underlined. Zos HaMasechta, Yesh La Yeter Se'et Al-Brachos V'Nezikin. So it says the Magen Avos. Now again, he's biased because he wrote a commentary on Pirkei Avos, but maybe that's why he wrote a commentary on Pirkei Avos. He says, even though there's three opinions in the Gemara, but really the main opinion, the correct opinion, the most true opinion is that Pirkei Avos is the most important text. The most important text for spiritual excellence, even though there's three opinions in the Gemara, but he says the better one, the best of the three opinions, is the one that's said to study Pirkei Avos. And why is that? Look at the middle of the second line. Kiyaduhu, because everybody knows. Shaha ma'ala hagadola, asha'ein achareha ma'ala, hishiyaha adam, tov la shamayim, v'tov la briyot. Says the Tashbetz something very profound. It's maybe so obvious to some of you that it will sound cliche, but it's, and he says it's yadua, so who am I to say it's not yadua? But it's one of those things that's yadua intellectually, but it's not actually in the kishkas. Says the Tashbetz, we all know, from a Torah perspective, to be truly a good person, to be truly a great person, requires both Benam L'Chavero and Benam L'Makom. Right? There's no such thing as half Shabbos, and there's no such thing as half religious. You can't just say, I'm going to be pious when it comes to my relationship with Hashem, and I'm going to daven amazingly, I'm going to be so careful on Shabbos, and kashrus, and tznius, and all those things. And I'm also going to have a temper, and yell at people, and gossip, and be mean, and and somehow, but I'm religious because I wear a long skirt, or I'm religious because I go to that shul which has a super high mechitza, or I really do daven every day. And I'm not minimizing any of those things. You should daven every day. But, of course, you also have to have Benam L'Chaveiro. But if the opposite is also true, says Tash Beitz. You can't just say, well, I'm going to be a good person. I'll be involved in Tikkun Olam. And I'll be part of the Federation. And I'll give tzedakah. And I'll actually go to a soup kitchen and help people. And all these very genuinely wonderful things. I'm going to help the widows and the orphans and everybody. But Shabbos, come on, who really cares if I use my phone or not? You know, kashrus doesn't really matter. In the old days, it was about health. But now everything's healthy. We have an FDA. You know, we have a Srata Briut. So says Tash Beitz, everybody knows that really, 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 they're both wrong. In order to be a truly Adam HaShalem, to be a truly pious Jew, you need both. Well, if that's the case, he makes the point, Perkei Avos is the way to achieve both. As opposed to the first opinion in the Gemara, which said Mili Dinazikin, that's focusing on just Benam L'Chaveiro. The last opinion in the Gemara, Brachos, right? Someone who's davening all the time or saying Brachos is always thinking about Hashem, very pious, Benam L'Makom. But Perkei Avos, he says, if you go through the whole Masechta, 5 or 6 chapters, you will see that it actually has both. Tov L'Shamayim, V'Tov L'Brios. And then, again, I won't read everything inside, but he quotes the various Gemaras that talk about how you could be a tzaddik, very very provocative Gemara that he quotes. There's such a thing as a tzaddik who's not Tov. You think that if you're a tzaddik, you have to also be good. But the Gemara itself is addressing this phenomenon, that there could be people who are pious in one area, they daven carefully, they're makpid on halachos, but they're just not nice people. That's a tzaddik, that's not Tov. That's obviously not the deal, ideal. However, as he says in the middle, Al yidei maseches brachos, Adam hu tov l'shamayim, but also going to be tov. Okay, that's so. Brachos will get you to shamayim, as we saw. Nezikin will get you tov l'brios. But if you look at the last line, the last part that's underlined, the Perkei Avos is unique. Zos hamasechta he koleles shtei hatoliot yachad. But Perkei Avos has them both. V'kayim osam hu tov l'shamayim v'tov l'briot. Okay, so that's very, very profound. It would be impressive enough and worthy enough of our consideration that, you know, Chazal have this list. What made the top 3? Everyone loves lists. Top 5, top 10. Right? Top 3. If I had to ask, you know, what are the 3 most important mitzvot? What are the 3 most important things you could study? You know, like in yeshivas a lot. I remember once they used to ask Rav Lichtenstein, you know, if you were stranded on a desert island and you could only bring one sefer, what would you bring? Right? These are all interesting questions. So to get, just to get on the list is already something, right? So just the fact that Perkei Avos is one of the 3, but says that Tash Beitz, no, it's not just one of the 3, it's the best of the 3. It's not just the finalist, it's the winner. Perkei Avos is the most important text you can have because it embodies both Ben Adam L'Makom and Ben Adam L'Chavero. In a very similar way, the Me'iri, in source number 4, he says something very similar. And he also, by doing this, he addresses a very well-known question, which is, why is it called Perkei Avos? What does it got to do with Avos? So there's different interpretations, but his interpretation is that Avos here doesn't mean actual fathers. It means important categories, the big ideas, right? The kind of things that would be, you know, worthy of a TED Talk or something. These are not little minor details that you would have, like, you know, a technical writer would write about, but the real big issues. They're avos. They're the big issues. And as he says in source number 4 in the middle, Dvarim Shehem Avos v'yesod v'sharish v'ikr l'kol chachma. These are the things which are the foundational principles of Judaism. And they are the derech, the mitzvah, and the shvil l'kol ma'il. I don't know if you did a list. I never did a list. Maybe we could just ask ChatGPT and it'll just tell us. Like, how many different principles are there in Perkei Avos? But says the Me'iri, whatever that number is, that's a fraction of what it really is. Because each one of those things that are valued in Perkei Avos, there's a drop-down menu from all of them. They all lead to 10 other things. Because these are the big, big values and the big issues. And as he says here on the last line, Kol Shekein Behayot Genuzot Bekirba, right? Hidden, buried, you know, entrenched in Perkei Avos, Harbe Mipinos HaTorah Mushor Shemuna. You have all the principles of faith, of good midos. There's so many important things in Perkei Avos. That's why it's called Avos. That's why it is so important. Okay, so that's very similar to what we saw in source number 3. The Perkei Avos is on the list, and it may even be a first among equals, because it is so important and has so many foundational principles. Very interesting. But I want to share with you, just as we finish this part of the shiur, an alternative approach, which is also in its own way, not necessarily contradictory, but it's a completely different way of looking at it. But I think it also opens up something very fascinating, not only about Perkei Avos, but about life. And that is source number five. And that is the Maharsha. The Maharsha, Shmuel Edels, was one of the great, you know, late Rishonim, or early Achronim from Poland. I believe it was from Poland. Anyway, so he, in his commentary on the Gemara we saw in source number two, that talks about the big three different opinions about what the things are. So says the Maharsha, source number five, he says, we often make a mistake. We often think, and I did this already before, that we could divide up all of Torah into two parts. Two categories. Ben Adam L'Chavero and Ben Adam L'Makom. Interpersonal and our relationship with Hashem. Says the Maharsha, it's a mistake. There are actually three categories of Torah principles. Ulefi Shiesh L'Adam, source number five. The Ma'asav HaTovot, Gimel Chalakim. Really, you should divide up all of Torah into three parts. I say, well, what's left? If I already have interpersonal, Ben Am L'Chavero, Ben Am L'Makom, what's left? Says the Maharsham, the Hainu, number one, Tov L'Shamayim, okay, that we saw, that's my relationship with Hashem, Ben Am L'Makom, Tov L'Briot, that's my relationship with other people, Ben Am L'Chavero, but then says the Maharsha, there's a third category, the Tov L'Atzmo, by which he does not mean like the modern day Oprah, love yourself. That's not what he means. I'm not sure he's against that, but that's not what he means. He means the things which are not about your relationship with other people or relationship with Hashem, but Bein Adam La'atzmo. The things which are just about you and yourself. Even if you're alone, what kind of person are you? What are your midos? Right? Some midos that we have impact how we relate to other people. But some are not going to affect other people. They're just a question of how we view the world, right? Whether I believe or not. What my level of amun or bitachon is. What is that? That's really a ben adam la'atzmo. That's about me. Not necessarily affecting. It's not whether I put on tefillin or not. It's not whether I kept kosher or not. It's not whether I was nice to somebody. There are so many things which are ben adam la'atzmo. So he says here, that's really what's going on in the Gemara. And really, he says it's not so much that Pirkei Avos is better than the other three. But rather, it's not really a machloket. Really, they're all complementary of each other. Because that is the first opinion says, if you want to become a chassid, study Nezikin. That is to say, focus on your Ben Adam L'Chavero. The third opinion said, you want to become a chassid? Brachos. Ben Adam L'Makom. But the middle opinion, Pirkei Avos, D'Oz Yitakein Ma'asav, Shietov L'Atzmo Bimidos. Now obviously there's a connection. Right? If I work on my temper, so I'm, right, that's, he's saying, Amida, that's about who I am. Right? What kind of person am I? It's obviously going to relate to impact how I relate to other people. So yes, if I don't work on myself and I have a bad midah of I get angry, so then when I get angry at somebody else, the fact that I have not worked on myself will impact how I treat other people. So of course there could be a connection. But his point is, and this is I think where is important to consider, is that even when it doesn't yet bleed out, even when it doesn't affect other people, the midos that we have, the good ones and hopefully the bad ones that we can get rid of or at least minimize, they are important in and of themselves before we ever have that connective tissue to other people. Just what kind of person am I? What midos do I have? Independent of how they will impact the people around me. That's called Ben Adam La'atzmo, and that's a value. Some people think, what's the difference if I'm this, that, or the other? I can suppress it and treat other people well. Now, that is a good thing, to treat other people well. And especially if it's against your nature, that's actually an accomplishment of sorts. But it's actually not enough. Says the Maharsha, the Chiddush of Pirkei Avos. And I think once you have Pirkei Avos, then you could say it's therefore the Chiddush of all of Musar. There's a whole genre, an whole area of Torah that take its cue from Pirkei Avos, which is, it's not only about whether if I have enough amuna, therefore I will or won't daven. Right? That's my Ben Adam La'atzmo impacting my Ben Adam L'Makom. Or if I have worked on my humility enough, I won't be arrogant when somebody next to me says something which I think is stupid. I won't react in an arrogant or pompous way. That's how it impacts my Adam L'Chavero. Those are both true. But Ben Adam L'Atzmo is important in and of itself, even without the vertical or the horizontal impact. Just where it is. What kind of person am I? And then we can, go down the list. Am I empathetic? Am I kind? Am I humble? Am I angry? Go through all the good midos and all the bad midos. Yes, if you have the good ones, it'll impact both vertically and horizontally. And if you have the bad ones, it will. But don't think that that's the only reason why midos are important. Midos are important in and of themselves. Again, they're important in and of themselves, and the fact that they impact everything else doubles and triples down. It's like, compound interest. Right? If you have the good midah, so it's already good. Even if you have it in a non-interest-bearing account, it's just a good midah. It's an asset. You have it. It's on the books. But it's actually better than that because it gives you compound interest. Having that good midah will help you with Hashem, will help you with other people. But even before it does those things, it's just an asset in and of itself. There's a third class called Ben Adam La'atzmo. And throughout the centuries, there have been various individual books, individual rabbis, or entire movements, like I say, like the Musar movement, that focused on it. But says the Maharsha, the Chiddush, the source of that whole phenomenon, is Pirkei Avos, and that's why it is so important. So whether you accept the first approach that we saw, the Pirkei Avos is even better than the other two, because it really contains interpersonal and our relationship with Hashem, that's approach number one, or you say it doesn't necessarily have to be more important, but it's at least as important because it reflects not Ben Adam L'Makom or Ben Adam L'At or L'Chavero as much as it is. Really, a good part of it has been Adam L'Atzmo. Right? And another way of putting that, this may sound a little sappy or a little postmodern, if you will, but what it's really saying is even before you can love other people, you have to love yourself. Before you can be good to other people, you have to be good to yourself. You have to be a good person. Period. That will help you be good to other people. It'll help you be better in everything, including Hashem. But the first thing is to be a good person just for yourself. That's Ben Adam L'Atzmo, and that really is what Pirkei Avos is about. Okay? So, any questions on this? So, we have barely read the Mishnah yet, but we've seen there's tremendous profundity. This is part of what makes Pirkei Avos so special. Okay, now I want to transition a little bit to answer the question that we mentioned at the outset, which is, you might think is a technical question, but I think it's one that is worthy of an answer. And some of the answers actually might be very fascinating. And that is, why out of all of the Masechtot in the Mishnah and in the Gemara, how come only Pirkei Avos begins with this kind of history lesson? Moshe, Yeshua, to Zakenim, to the Anshekhet. We could have started Masechta Shabbos that way. Could have started the laws of Megillah that way, of anything. Karbonos, not only Pirkei Avos has that. Why? That's peculiar. So that's not my question, obviously. That's such an obvious question that all the Mefarshim asked that as well. And I had a wedding last night, so I didn't even have a chance to really start preparing the shiur until I came home from the wedding. So in the lateness of the hour last night, in my mind, I really thought that there was two different answers to the question. And then this morning, when I was just printing up the source sheets, now I'm not sure if I was maybe making a mountain out of a molehill. Maybe they're really all saying the same thing. But I collected for you three sources on your sheets, 6, 7, and 8, which I thought maybe were saying slightly different things, and now maybe they're all saying the same thing, I'm not sure. But either way, the point, which is very, very important, whether there's nuanced differences in all the sources or they're really all saying the same thing, but either way, they're basically making certainly one common, very, very incredible point. And this is something which we have talked about in other shiurim in previous years. I know I've spoken about it in this context, but it's one of my topics that I speak about often on Pesach or even during the Sfir period. It's one of my pet peeves. Or on Tisha B'Av, I speak about this as well. And that is the fact that all these Mefarshim basically give whatever nuanced differences are, but they give one basic answer, and that is, you know why Pirkei Avos has to start with this chain of Masorah? Because, sadly, there's a tendency for people to minimize the importance of everything we just spent 20 minutes talking about. Benam l'chaveiro, benam l'atzmo, midos, being a good person, menschlichkeit. People have a tendency to view that as just, you know, hippy-dippy, you know, positive psychology and good advice. And, you know, Aristotle had his ethics and Dr. Phil has his. Right, everyone's got their different thing. So some rabbis, you know, 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, had theirs. This is not really Torah. This has nothing to do with really from. This is, what did the founding fathers, you know, they had some very smart things to say about all sorts of things. And, you know, why can't I just read those? And, you know, Abraham Lincoln had a nice few good things to say. And a lot of people over the centuries, you know, they're smart people. They are smart people. So we are hardwired. Again, it's a fascinating thing, which is why I like speaking about it, because I really also find it so fascinating. We're hardwired not to dismiss the importance of being a nice person. I don't think that's true. There are sociopaths out there, but I'm not talking about that. But I think most of us are hardwired not to dismiss the importance of being a good person, but that we don't see being good as the same as being religious. We see them as separate. And that's the mistake. You don't need to give me a whole list of this great rabbi, to this great rabbi, to this great rabbi. And that's why we keep Shabbos. Like, if I'm keeping Shabbos anyway, it's because I believe that it goes back to the Torah. Like, duh. Like, what else? Why else am I doing it? But Davka, because of the more universalistic and commonsensical attraction to the things in Pirkei Avos. On the one hand, you know, like I said, more books will be written about it. It's very popular. But paradoxically, people also will therefore minimize its innate importance and sanctity. Because, you know, every culture has their, you know, aphorisms. Benjamin Franklin had his, and this one has his. So we have this one. But is that on the same par as the laws of mikvah, on the laws of kashrus, of Shabbos, Yom Kippur? People are hardwired to be dismissive. And therefore, Chazal went out of their way to start Pirkei Avos. You should know. Why do we know these things? They may sound so obvious to you. And on some level, yes, of course, there is a certain accessible wisdom to them. But you should know that they are as authentically from Sinai and part of our Masorah as anything else. So just that, I think, is an incredibly important point. Just to see a few highlights in some of those sources, you'll see how these great Mefarshim make the point explicitly. So, for example, take a look at even source number 6 is really the best example. This is Rav Avarja mi Bar Tanura, the famous Bar Tanura. I guess from the same town that the wine company got their inspiration, but I don't think he was necessarily in the wine business, but he was a great Italian commentary on the Mishnah. And he said as follows. He says, we'll read source 6 inside. He says, Omer ani, why do we start off with this whole tradition? Lefisha mesecha zo, enam yusedet al perish mitzvah mi mitzvah ha-Torah, kishar mesechto shav mishnah. If you read Pirkei Avos, it's not the same thing as reading any other kind of Mishnah or Gemara. Nor we have a pasuk in the Chumash. It says in Parshat Mishpatim X, and the Chazal have an interpretation that because it said that, they had an extra vav there. And that really teaches me that if I do this damage, I have to pay this much. Or because of something, therefore I can't, cut strawberries on Shabbos, or whatever the thing is. There's a certain typical, to use the fancy term, like a hermeneutic. There's a certain, you know, process. There's a text, there's an analysis. You don't have that in Pirkei Avos. You just have these aphorisms, these nice ethical principles. And therefore, because of that, they're just musarim, they're just musar and midos. Maybe you don't think they're anything unique or special. After all, as he says, middle of the second line, Chachmei umos ha'olam gamkein, chibru svarim. Many wise people of the general population, of the non-Jewish world, over the centuries, they've also had, and he's not dismissing them, he's not ridiculing them. A lot of people come up with nice ideas for good ethical behavior. You might think this is no different. The fichach, where it's underlined, hitchil hatana b'masecha zu, Moshe kibul Torah miSinai. Lomar lecha, why do we have the Masorah here? To teach us, shamidos b'hamusarim shabazu ha'masechta, lo badu osam chachmei ha'mishnah milibam, ela af elu ne'emru b'Sinai. This isn't just that, you know, Rabbi Kiva was a really sweet guy, And one day, Rabbi Akiva, you know, was taking a walk with one of his kids and said, you know, you really should judge people favorably. If it says in Mishnah, if it says in Perkei Avos, "Danet kol adam lekav zchus," it's because that's a principle that we got from. Yeah, you might have thought of it on your own. Maybe you would have, but that's not how the Mishnah knew it. The Mishnah knows it the same way it knows to keep Shabbos and to keep kosher and to keep everything else. This is something that we got. This is divine wisdom. It's not just that there were a bunch of smart rabbis who lived at the beginning of the second base of Mikdash and came up with some good ideas, the way Ben Franklin did or the way Aristotle did. But in fact, these are ideas which actually come from the Torah. I have not seen it inside because it's not the most accessible work, but I saw a number of the more recent Svarim pointed out that the Vilna Gaon has a commentary on Perkei Avos where pretty much all he does is on every witticism, on every aphorism in the Perkei Avos, he quotes a pasuk somewhere in Tanakh that's the basis of it. Even though you won't find any of that in Perkei Avos. But his point being to show that these are logically derived principles, but they really come from Psukim and Torah. And that's really the same idea that the Bartanura is making, this point as well. And similarly, in source number 7, the Tiferes Yisrael says, again, a similar thing as I said before, that you might have thought, Shelo Yachshov Adam, right? Because if I have to tell you not to think it, it's because you would have otherwise thought it. That people sometimes think that for their hashlama, for their self-perfection, for their refinement, it'll be enough to just do all the other things. But who said that it's so important to do the things that are in Perkei Avos, The Goyim do that too. They have also their ethical principles. The answer is no. We dafke have to have the limusora in Perkei Avos, so you shouldn't make that mistake. You should realize that this is also important, and this also comes from Moshe, this also comes from the Torah. Okay, so that's, again, I just gave you a little bit of source 7, and there might be something a little different in source number 8, the Meiri, but for our purposes now, and because it's going to get late, let's assume that that's pretty much the answer to the question. Okay, there might be some nuances, those who want to read it more inside, but I think that that in and of itself is worthy of something that we studied and shared again today. Again, some of you may remember, I brought this up in other shiurim, because it is a pet peeve of mine, and I just think it's so fascinating about human nature. But I've yet to be convinced that I'm wrong. I think and this is just enough. In fact, when I've given these shiurim in the past, I have not used these sources. So next time I give some of you may remember, I have a shiur on Rabbi Akiva and his students and what went wrong during the Sfira period. how could it be that Rabbi Akiva, of all people, his students were so deficient? And my theory is exactly what I just said here. Is that even though Rabbi Akiva was preaching, the people weren't listening. And he may have been the first, I'm not sure, but there have been many, many, many examples since, including, I can think of common examples today, where you have people who think that they're much firmer than their Rebbeim. They may go to the Gemara Shir, they may go to whatever, but I really know what's firm. And firm is long sentences, or firm is whatever. But here, even when the Rebbe is saying, but be a good person, be a mensch, people were hardwired to kind of be dismissive of that. So this is pretty much what all these sources, 6, 7, 8, are saying about Perkei Avos. The reason that not only we have Perkei Avos, but Chazal themselves were self-aware that there's this hardwired Yetzer Hara that we have to be dismissive. Again, I'm not talking about the person who thinks it's irrelevant about whether they're a good person or not. They exist, but I think no one would defend that. And I hope it's not so common. But I think it is the more subtle, but nevertheless damaging and incorrect common problem is that people think that being good is not the same thing as being religious. That they don't see the same, that's part of one indivisible whole, that's the problem. And therefore, Chazal themselves were aware of this, and therefore they emphasized the Mesorah, Davka by Perkei Avos, to disabuse you, hopefully, of that incorrect notion. Okay, we have a little bit more time, let's discuss a few of the other important, but I would say a little bit smaller issues that came up, even in terms of the nuance and language in the Mishnah. So if you recall, about 40 minutes ago when we started this year, so we pointed out that the we thought it was interesting that the Mishnah says that Moshe was Masruha Masar Yehoshua. Why does it say the term Masar, not Lamad? And number two is, why only Yehoshua? He taught it to everybody. Right? This is Mefarshim already noticed this. So take a look at source number 9. Actually, we'll skip for a second. We'll go back to 9 in a minute. Look at source number 10. I take it back. Let's go back to 9. I'm sorry. So, the first question, I skipped the point, which is, we also asked this at the beginning. Why say Mi Sinai? If you really mean he got it from God, on Sinai or at Sinai, why say mi Sinai? So the Tiferes Yisrael source number 9 says something very beautiful. Okay, consistent with things we've been saying, but it's a slightly different point. Sinai is an allusion not to where Moshe got the Torah, but why. Why was Moshe the one who got the Torah? Why was he deserving of it? Ratzalomar, Moshe haya anav ma'od. We know that Moshe, the Torah itself tells us, Moshe was the most humble person, extreme humility. Al yidei zeh, and as a result of that, kibul ha-Torah. Moshe deserved to be the one who got the Torah. Because the Torah itself is nimshul olamayim, right? The Torah in different places is comparable to water. And Chazal say, just like water finds, right? If you spill water anywhere, well, it naturally goes to the lowest point. Water will always find the lowest point. So too, Torah will naturally gravitate towards the quote-unquote lowest point, i.e. the most humble person. And then, number 3, because of all that, so the Torah needs humility, Moshe was humble, and as it says on the second line here, ulechein kibla Torah mi Sinai, as many of us have learned, and our children and our grandchildren have learned in elementary school or even in kindergarten, why did Hashem give the Torah on Sinai? Was it the most beautiful? Was it the French Alps? Was it the Swiss Alps? Was it the Dolomite? No, it was the smallest, most nebuch, puny mountain. And Hashem gave the Torah on Sinai to teach us exactly this lesson, even though it was the Namuch Baharim, it was the least impressive in the area, but that highlighted this idea of humility. It wasn't about how big and strong and beautiful you are, it was about how humble you are. And therefore all of this, that it's Moshe and that it's on Sinai, it's coming to teach us Lahoros, Tarak Aide Anava, Makor Lakol Hamidos, Yashrus Yisharot, Yizke Adam Lid Torah. So that profound lesson about the importance of humility, not only in general, and not only is humility important because you can't be a nice person if you're not humble. Right? A person who's never been wrong is not a good friend, is not a good spouse, is not a good parent. So you need humility for all that. But a chiddush is, it's not only that. Something that's less obvious is that you need humility even to have a good relationship with Hashem. You need humility to study Torah. There is no Torah on any level without first humility. That's why the Torah was given on Sinai. That's why the Torah was given to Moshe. And that lesson is alluded to by the word choice of the Mishnah, Moshe kibul Torah mi Sinai. Right? There's other ways it could have said it. But it says, Dafka, Moshe kibul Torah mi Sinai, to highlight this point, that it all was because of Moshe's humility and the importance that we're supposed to therefore take of humility. Now, source number 10 is the question I got to for a second, which is, previously I jumped ahead, which is, why does it say Masruha li Yoshua? Right? He gave the Torah to lots of people, millions of people, not just Yoshua. And why the word Masruha? So, if you take a look at source number 10, Rashi is already discussing why only Yoshua. So he says, Limda l'kol Yisrael. Wait, Moshe didn't just give the Torah to Yoshua, he gave the Torah to everybody. He quotes a pasuk to prove this. We have a Gemara that talks about how Moshe gave the Torah to everybody. So therefore Rashi says on the second line, Lama nemar Masruha li Yoshua. What about all the other leaders even? Not just the millions of people. What about his nephews, Elazar, or Pinchas, or the other Zakenim who were prophesying in the camp? So says Rashi, Shelo rotza lemosra ela, lemisha hayamemis atzma min ne'urav, ba'olei chachma v'kana shem tov ba'olam, v'zehu Yehoshua. So of course Moshe taught the Torah to everybody. That wasn't what the Mishnah is telling us. But it specifically uses the term masruha. We don't know what exactly that means. We'll get to that in a second. But it uses a language which we wouldn't have expected. So what, did he teach it to everybody? Yes, that's why he doesn't use the word teach. He taught the Torah to everybody. But there was a special relationship that Moshe had with Yoshua. And why was Yoshua zoche? Why did Yoshua merit to have this special relationship? So here Rashi is quoting from a Chazal, not because Yoshua was necessarily the most brilliant. Chazal talk about other people, Yehuda ben Kenaz or others who might have had better IQs than Yoshua. But Yoshua was the most dedicated. He was completely, completely committed and dedicated to Moshe as a teacher. And this is the idea which we have in other Gemaras about Shimush can sometimes be even more important than Limud. Right? You know, so again, I'm sure many of you had this experience even with your own teachers, maybe, right? It's not so much the book knowledge you get from people, but having a relationship with a mentor, with a rabbi, with a certain rebbetzin, with whoever, right? That's why I liken the whole yeshiva and the seminary world, right? It's such a nice thing when You get to go to the teacher's house for a Shabbos or see them interact with their family, right? Being with them and seeing how they live can often be even more powerful and instructive than the class. So Yehoshua was that one. Yehoshua was there for Moshe in every possible way. He was dedicated to Moshe, and because of his dedication, he was chosen. Now, what does Masar mean specifically, and why might that have been different? This is really something very, very interesting, and this is suggested in source number 11 by the Tosfos Yontif. He says the term Masar means Shekol Mashekibel Masar Li Yehoshua. The word Masar, to give over in this context, is actually a very deliberate term. It means that Moshe withheld nothing from Yehoshua. Even the most mystical and metaphysical mysteries and secrets of the universe and Torah, whatever Moshe learned, only Moshe could go up on Sinai to get it. But Moshe gave it all over to Yehoshua. And in that sense, says the Tosfos Yontif, Moshe was different. Yehoshua was different than everybody else. It's not that, well, if Moshe gave the Torah to everybody, so why single out Yehoshua? Says Tosfos Yontif, he taught the Torah that you and I can see, so to speak, the accessible Torah, to everybody. But Yehoshua actually did get more than everybody else. Because there were certain things that Moshe couldn't give over or wouldn't give over to everybody. Certain secrets, certain insights, certain mysteries. But there always has to be a continuity that at least somebody alive knows those secrets. And Moshe gave those over to Yehoshua. That's also why then there's a break in the Mishnah, right? He gives over to Yehoshua. Then it says Yehoshua Zakenim, Zakenim the Nevi'im. But then again we have Nevi'im Masruha. How come there's a break and we only return with Masruah at the end? So he explains that until you got to Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, they were all on the same level. But the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, as great as they all were, the Gemara tells us explicitly they weren't all prophets. Anshei Knesset HaGedolah was more of a potpourri. They were all great tzaddikim. But some were prophets and some were not. Therefore, you might have thought because they were, some of them on a different level or even on a lower level, you might have thought that at that point we couldn't give over everything. And the answer was no. Even the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, Masruah, they were able to give over everything of these secrets. Now once we finish that period in time, then there really is Yerida Sadoros, because we don't have that afterwards. And that's why there's this hierarchy, right? In theory, it would take a lot of guts, but in theory, I could argue on Rabbi Kiva Eger. Or, even maybe, theoretically, you could maybe make the case I could argue on the Rambam or Rashi. But no one would make the case that you could argue on Chazal. Where is this idea that there's this bright red line in Chazal and there's a steep drop-off? And the answer, that's what he says, this is this idea. The final stage of Masruha, where they really got everything, was that period of the Chazal. And then after that, there really was a little bit of a dip. We still have a few more minutes, so I want to mention briefly, if I could, just a few final points. So one is that there is an alternative way of looking at this whole Masruah Yehoshua, which is completely different, which is that it's got nothing to do with the learning part as much as it has to just do with leadership. That every generation needs a leader. We won't read it inside, but source number 12, in the Medrash Shmuel, so if you remember, we've quoted him in the past, he was a great Sfardi Chacham, who lived in Tzfat, about 400 to 500 years ago, in the golden age of Tzfat, and he collected it was a collection of other people's commentaries, as well as his own, on Pirkei Avos, of his contemporaries. So source number 12, he says, the reason it's Masruah LeYoshua, why Yoshua, not everybody else? Why the word Masruah and not teach? Because the Mishnah, he says, is not talking about that. It's talking about political leadership. In order for all the things in the Torah and the values of Pirkei Avos, in order for them all to flourish, you need strong leadership. Now we would say you need strong leadership to inspire and to guide, and I think he would believe that. He says, and we know this, it's far from our lived experience, but we know that in the ancient times and even in the medieval period, right, there was actual coercive enforcement in the Jewish world, right? You didn't do a mitzvah, you could get beat up by the Bezdin. Right? Everyone wants us to beat up the guy not giving his wife a get. I'm not saying we shouldn't beat him up. That's a more complicated. But the point is, in Chazal, they didn't just beat up that guy. They beat up guys who didn't build their sukkah either. That sounds totally foreign to us. Like, we're very much of a live and let live society. And I'm not saying that's wrong. In the modern world that we live in, I don't think it would be a good idea for rabbis to start threatening people and beating them up if they didn't do mitzvos. But in the original Torah's conception, there was much more of a latitude and authority of political leadership to really enforce the right thing. So says the Rebbe Shmuel, whether you want to go with the more coercive or more the modern vision of leadership, but there needs to be political leadership. You can't just say, here's the Torah, I inspired you, good luck. Maybe you could do that to an individual, but a society needs a leader or else it'll be hefker. So he says that's what Masrua is referring to, the political leadership of Yeshua, not talking about the Torah. So I just thought that's interesting because that's completely different than the way we usually understand the Mishnah. Okay, last but not least, let's just conclude by seeing the last two sources on the page, sources 14 and 15. And this brings us really to the end of the Mishnah, where we said that they, Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, said three things. Right, metunim bedin, be deliberate in your judgment, don't rush to judgment. Hemidu tamidim harve, have a lot of students. Also siyag the Torah, make a fence around the Torah. So my first point, without any sources, is it's clear when you read the simple, if you're being honest, the simple reading of this Mishnah, who is being spoken to here? The rabbis. Right? Most of Pirkei Avos is speaking to all of us. But these three things are specifically referring to dayanim. You're on a bezdin. Don't be quick to make a judgment. You're a rabbi. Somebody gives you a shayla. Don't be quick to answer. Metunim bedin. Think about it before you give an answer. Have a lot of students. And make, who's responsible for making a siyag around Torah? Obviously, the rabbis are in charge of making those kind of takanot. On the other hand, I think it's also true, I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say, that each of these three things is absolutely relevant to every one of us in our own lives. Right, having metunim bedin is great advice to anybody. Don't make snap judgments. Right, don't make a snap judgment at the grocery store when you think that the woman at the kupa gave you the wrong amount of change. Don't make a snap judgment, you know, when you're driving when you think someone cut you off. Don't make snap judgments to your spouse. Right, it's good advice for all of us. Right, hamidu tamidim harbe is also a good thing, especially for parents. Right, and it's actually very similar to Chazal that encourage people to have as many children as they can. Right, because right, it just increases your odds that at least somebody's going to turn out okay. That's really how at least one Gemara makes it seem. Basically, you just don't think. Well, I had X number of kids; they're all going to be good. No, you never know. Maybe the youngest one, maybe the next one will be the. You never know, right? So you want to increase your odds of having, as they might have said once upon a time in Kaddishol. Thank God we don't use that term anymore. We have higher ambitions for our children now than just still say Kaddish for us. But nevertheless, Hamidu Tamidim Harbe, you should try to have as broad an impact as possible. I think that's a very important lesson for all of us. And of course, Siyag LaTorah is something we could all do in our own lives. And I think it's actually true. This is not me just being a pulpit rabbi here or darshaning, right? It's true that Halacha says X or Y. But if you know yourself that X or Y is incredibly difficult for you, so it behooves you not to go right up to the line but say, I'm not going to do X or Y. Create some space. Don't put yourself in certain situations if you know that you're not going to handle them well. Be honest with yourself. Where are you vulnerable? What's difficult for you? That's also Siyag LaTorah. It doesn't just have to be, the Chazal made a rule called Muksa. Don't touch a pencil because you might write with it. That's true. That's what the Mishnah is saying. But we can incorporate that wisdom into our own lives as well. Right? There are a lot of things that, some of us, it's not so hard for me. I don't need to start making extra siyagim so I don't eat lobster. I'm not even tempted. And if I would walk into a store that sold it, or someone asked me, hey, can you carry some lobster on the plane? I would or wouldn't do it. I don't have to worry about that. But there's other things in my life that are hard for me. So instead of just saying, well, as long as I'm not technically violating, right? Come on, rabbi, where does it say? Is it allowed or not allowed? Don't give me your rabbi speeches. Right? That's a very common attitude, but I think it's often a mistaken attitude. Because sometimes it's a mistake. It could be more than just a mistake, it could be dangerous to just focus on where the actual cliff is, right? When you go to Niagara Falls, there's a bar, and the bar is not right before the fall. There's a little bit of space. Now some yodels still manage to fall over. And even if you have a siyag, you might breach, or you might go right through that too. But a person should know about him or herself, what's hard for me, what's going to be difficult, and then figure out what are ways that I can create a little buffer zone, a little space to protect me, so hopefully I should never get to the point where I know it's too tempting or too difficult. So I think the Mishnah, even though it's really, I think, clearly intended for the judges or the great rabbis, but really has lessons for all of us. But I want to just end by going back to sources 14 and 15, which is to point out the following. Why does our Mishnah say, they said, Heim Omru Shlosha Dvarim? They said three things. Now, this is a very important question, even linguistically, because as you know, much of the first prakim of Perkei Avos is all about, and this rabbi was this, and he said this, or they said these things. And the question we could ask about all of these Mishnayos, including the very first one, is, what do you mean they said X, or they said Y? Anyone with any intelligence, let alone the rabbis of Perkei Avos, said many things. Anshei Knesset HaGdola, they said three things. What do you mean they said three things? They said a million things. So what does the Mishnah mean when it says Anshei Knesset HaGdola said three things? We know they said a lot more than three things. Right? Rabbi Kiva said, you know, Rabbi Kiva never said anything else. He said, right? It's a very misleading phrase. But please, not intended to be misleading. It's obviously telling us something. So I think the simplest answer, and this is usually how I explain it to people, is what says in source number 15. Margula Befumayu. It doesn't mean this is the only thing that they said. And this is true for the whole Perkei Avos. Whenever it says, and he said X, or he said Y, it doesn't mean it's the only thing that they said. But it means that this was like the most common thing, right? I'm sure in every family, is true in my family as well. If I would ask my kids, you know, what's the thing that Abba's always repeating? Right, I can think about even my own family at the Seder, right? There are certain Divrei Torah. Every year, my father's going to go back. I don't know if I ever told you this. Yes, Abba, we have heard this many, many times, actually. But please continue, because it's actually very, right? Because certain things are important. So we repeat them. So these are the things that, not like necessarily go over, I said 100 things. But these are the three things that were really important to them. That's Marigula B'Pumayim. In source number 14, the Bartanur says something that's just provocative to think about. He says something that's specific to this Mishnah, not necessarily relevant to the rest of the Masechet. He says these three things are important. Shiyesh behem kiyam haTorah. The Perkei Avos is speaking to the leadership and saying you have responsibility. Everyone else has responsibility to be a good Jew, to be a good person. But you have an additional responsibility. You're the leaders of the people. It is your responsibility to make sure the Torah flourishes. Make sure the Torah gets passed to the next generation. You're one of the Chachmei HaMesorah. You're bringing down the tradition. That's not my responsibility. It's not your responsibility. But it's the big rabbis. That's their responsibility. So these three things, according to Rabbi Tanura, these are three things which are key to that mission that's unique to the big rabbis. Their job in transmitting the Torah, they have to be deliberate in their judgments, right? Again, we see this, and I don't want to be critical. I'm not going to mention any examples. But sometimes you'll see, you know, these kokores or something. It's like, did you think about it even for half a second? Or just because something bothered you, you quickly, you know, whipped out the press release. If you're going to be a leader, you have to know when to say yes, when to say no, what to say, what not to say, how to write things. When do you make a siyog? When do you say, you know, the community? Again, I'm being all serious. It's not so easy to be a big rabbi. Luckily, I'm not. But it's not so easy, right? All of a sudden, just imagine the last 15, 20 years, the world has turned upside down with the internet. So I could easily see, I'm not saying I agreed even then, but it's not crazy to me that certain rabbis would have said, you know what, we don't know how to handle this. This is like the gateway to hell. It's all us, sir. But I could easily see someone being intellectually honest saying, you know, 20 years later, that didn't work. Maybe we need to figure out plan B. So I'm not saying no one's infallible, but if you're going to deal with these big things, if you're a big rabbi, so have a metunim bedin. You have to think. It doesn't mean you're going to get it right. But it can't just be, well, the first thing that pops into your head, you fire out in the press release. You have to, and again, and the other examples too, you have to have a lot of talmidim, spread Torah, make important gzeros, but know when. Right? Sometimes you have to make gzeros. So I thought that's a very interesting idea. Again, it's not so much, that really is exclusively relevant to the big rabbis, but it's worthy for us to think about. It's provocative. But I think the more common answer is the one that we saw in source 15, which is these are the most common aphorisms that were truly beloved and dear to the respective rabbis' hearts. Okay, so that was our introduction to Perkei Avos, and I look forward to continuing this limud with you as we go into the summer. Have a great day.
Thank you.
You are welcome.